season, so I can figure out the other four.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Rec and Culture Division of Thunder Bay, bringing free events to the waterfront and all of Thunder Bay. Check out thunderbay.ca/events for more info and follow them on Facebook. Joey's Restaurant, a tasty little place for seafood, located at 595 Arthur Street West. Visit them Tuesdays for all-you-can-eat fish and chips and Thursdays $5 fish tacos. Some conditions apply. The Thunder Bay Blues Fest. Log on to tbayblues.ca to keep up with all the news on Thunder Bay's largest annual music festival, entering its 19th year in 2020.
Thunder, thunder, thunder! Thunder Geeks are live. Hello, Thundarians. I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
I'm Megan.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Chris.
And we're your Thunder Geeks.
And we're Thunder Geeks.
Welcome again to another very special episode. Of course, if this is your first time tuning in, hi, we're your Thunder Geeks. Each week we like to get together, talk about the nerdy stuff we've been up to this week, what's going on in our community, and just try to make you laugh for an hour and a half, brought to you by our lovely station, 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca. So
it's pie day. Pie, pie, pie. I like pie.
Yeah, Rob bombarded me. He's like, hey, it's pie day. Can we talk about pie? And I'm like, sure. You know what? Why not? We have no plan for pie, but Rob, you've been celebrating pie all day, I assume.
Yes, and I've went to a baker, not Kyle, an actual baker who does this for a living, and asked them a question that Kyle.
Why the shade on Kyle? Kyle's a lovely baker.
Because Kyle says tarts are not pie. This baker, who owns a bakery, says tarts are just miniature pies.
That's a controversial point, Kyle. So you believe that tarts are not pies?
Kyle.
Kyle just peaced out because he hates pie. He just, like, left his body. He's like...
Is he
disappeared.
Yes.
Kyle just hates pie that much that his, like, spirit is no longer with us in stream. It's literally just flying over to Rob's house to spite him right now because of how much he hates pie. And Rob is the reason why we're talking about it.
He just sent a message saying that his computer froze.
I love pie.
Oh, no. Like,
at a perfect face of discontent.
We'll get to his dissent, but I mean, intuitively to me, tarts are pies. Like, it's... pie is a category, but... what would be a... See, tarts are pies. Like, it is a mini pie, but we do name things different things based upon its shape. Like, you look at pasta, which is, you know, all gluten, flour, and such like that. Pasta's the same thing in many different shapes, and it's all just under the realm of pasta. But is the same thing true for pie? Because pie seems to be a size. Once we go down to a smaller size, we call it a tart. And though it is... a mini pie, it's not pie. Because pie, I don't know if there's an agreed upon size for pie.
Okay, well, you can go to the store and you can buy, like, miniature pies. And you just pop them in the oven, bake them a little bit, and they do their thing. And they're the same as, like, a larger pie. They're just in a small tin. And they're, like, the size of your hand. They're like a hand pie. You can just pick it up and eat it.
Hand pie is a pie.
But here's my thing. Pumpkin pie does not have a top layer crust. And therefore, is it not a pumpkin pie after that? No one calls it a pumpkin tart.
I mean, you could have a pumpkin tart, like a Kyle. Yeah. Are you back with us?
Yeah, what?
So I don't know if you heard, but the baker agrees that tarts are miniature pies. You like butter tarts, ergo, you like pie.
Too bad that baker's wrong.
But can you explain it to me? Because I've been trying to think about that perspective, but I'm curious. Explain to me. Why? What makes a tart not a pie?
It's a tart.
But what's the difference? Why is
the name?
A tart?
See, Kyle actually has no defense about his hatred. He can't admit to himself that he likes pie. Therefore, he has
but
to.
I don't. I like tarts.
It's not, which are just miniature pie.
Wait.
No?
Kyle, you like pizza. That's a pizza.
Pizza's not a pie. It's not a pie.
It's not a pie.
Pizza is a pie.
It's not a pie.
100% pie.
No, pizza's a pizza.
So then is cheesecake not a pie?
No, cheesecake is a cheesecake.
Cheesecake is a pie.
No, cheesecake is a cheesecake.
No, cheesecake's not a cake. So what I'm arguing here is thinking about classification. So you're going to have like family and suborder and genus for like biology. You have the same thing sort of thing with cooking. We have things that derive from it, but they're different things.
If I go stab somebody, bury them in the backyard, is that a pie?
No, because because
it definitely
I would,
because apparently everything is a pie according to you guys. So if I go if throw you... this guy in a pit, it's not murder, it's pie.
It's pie because there's a crust underneath, there's a filling, and there's a crust on top.
You didn't bake
so,
it.
So yeah, that's a pie.
No.
Oh, I mean, you could.
You have to bake it. If you didn't, if you do
so
that,
I'll fart in the grave before I put the top layer on, so it cooks a little bit.
No, you have to bake it. You have to
you leave it out in the sun for a week, and then you close it up, and there you go.
Bake it or fry it, because you can fry a pie.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Okay, my question is, if you were presented with an apple pie that was did not have a top layer, so it was in the it was like a shape of like the size of your palm, and it was like edible with just like nom by your hand, would you eat it?
Yes.
Are you just offering an apple?
If you're just offering me a crust with a bunch of like sloppy cinnamon pie filling in it, will I eat it? The answer is obviously yes. I reject the notion that you need a top layer for pie. I define pie. Pie is a crust with a filling.
And plus, there's those kind of pies that people make where it's like instead of a pure top, they like add designs and make it all pretty.
I would argue. Pie is a family. Pie is like a category of food. And there are things that fall under pie, as in pizza pie.
Tarts?
As in tarts. Tarts would be mini pies, but that is not pie. They're still, like, beyond just being the family of pie. It's like how we're Homo sapiens sapien, because we learned out there's other Homo sapiens. With pie, you have pie the family, and then you have, like, pie, like, the category, which what I would argue is, like, a certain, size. Like, the difference between a pie and a tart is size. And that's important. That's important because that does make them different. Because a tart is both a pie and not a pie. It just depends on the context of pie you're speaking of.
Is a grilled cheese a pie?
Is a pie.
No, that's a sandwich.
Everything's a pie.
What do you mean?
How is it not a pie?
It's got a
top layer, it's got a bottom layer, and it's got a filling.
It's not a crust. Yep.
It is absolutely a crust.
The bread has crust.
Or the bread isn't crust.
The bread has crust.
The bread has
crust, but it's not crust.
Yes, I'm with
but it has crust on it.
Yes. You can have
so if I cut the outside of it, put it on top of the bread, therefore the crust is not a part of the bread, but instead on top of the bread. Therefore, by your definition, it's grilled cheese pie.
Yes, you can definitely deconstruct a grilled cheese sandwich and rearrange it to be a pie. I will accept that.
Pies.
But a grilled cheese
pies,
a grilled,
you can have sandwich pies.
You can have sandwich pies. I'm not rejecting that you cannot make a grilled cheese sandwich into a pie. But with a sandwich, I think about presentation and I think about
hot dogs.
Shape.
Hot dog is a pie.
With a pie. No, because it is a bun. It is a bun, and that is different. From a crust. Buns
so what
have
saying
crusts.
Is hot dogs are a tart. Hot dogs are a tart.
No, I reject that.
Yes, hot dogs are tarts, bro.
No, I reject
that. It's only got the crust underneath.
Something can be a component
and it's got the
of something.
On top.
Something can be a component of something without being that thing.
Yeah, so
buns,
a tart is not a pie.
Tart is not
simple as that.
A tart has the ability to not be a pie depending on the context of pie.
Okay.
A tart is not a pie if we're talking about pie in terms of size, because as we shrink a pie, there's an eventual point where we'll agree that's a tart. That's not a pie. Where that is, I think, is a subject of debate. And we're going to have to look at several sizes of pie and decide is that a pie or is that a tart? Because like if you have a really small one, if you have like a teeny one, like a size of like, say, a toonie, that's a tart. That is not a pie. If I ordered a pie, like a butter tart pie, or
No, okay, butter tart pies are literally called sugar pies.
Sugar pies. So
butter tart pies are called sugar and raisin pies or pecan pies, which, guess what? Neither of these two pies have a top layer and therefore are tarts. So, Kyle, do you like pecan pie?
No.
That is a lie.
No, no,
that is a butter tart. Lie.
No. No.
It's a butter tart.
But
no, it's not.
That you cut into slices.
No, it's a pie. The thing is, I agree with Kyle on this part. It is different because he likes butter tarts. It's not the reason he likes pie. I think he likes pie when we're talking about a general shape of food, which is a pie shape, and that's where I get into where cheesecake is not a pie, is not a cake. It is a pie.
I don't like cheesecake either.
It doesn't matter. Like that's an aside. You like pizza, thus pizza pie. So there is a type. There is a genus of pie that you like. But you don't
reason
like pies.
Number 56 that
you don't
Kyle's
like pies.
He doesn't like cheesecake.
But you do like a type of pie.
You could say he's bisexual.
He's bisexual.
No, that's right, only if he is aroused by pie, which is that was the entire plot of that movie.
He should have done it in his bedroom, not in the kitchen.
He's just really disgusted by pies.
But he likes butter tarts. Tarts aren't pie.
I hate this.
No, I disagree. Butter tarts are not pie. It is called something different when you size it up to be a pie. Megan pointed that out. It's like it's sugar pie and raisins. Or a raisin and sugar pie. Like it is a different thing when it is blown up. But there's a point where it gets small enough where like, oh, that's a tart and that's fine.
Is it the crust of the butter tart that you like? Like, is that the part that you're like, if that was...
No, I like the butter tart.
You suck, bro.
No, I agree. A butter tart's not a pie. If I ordered a butter tart pie and then just got a regular sized butter tart, I'd be pissed. But if they call it a butter tart, I'm expecting something small. Like I'm expecting to be able to down it within like 2 to 3 bites, if I wanted to. I mean, like
you can do it in one. We know you.
What's the largest butter tart that you'll eat, Kyle? What for? Give us like a diameter here. Like, what is the cutoff
point?
No, I need to show me with your fingers. Come on, like give me an inches here.
Flip you off the second you ask
like,
him that.
Like, would you eat a butter tart
big
that
does
big?
Kyle like it.
Would you eat a butter tart?
What's
that
the girth?
Big? Like,
what's the girth of a tart?
4 inches.
At what point do you say no?
Yeah,
no, well, not that much.
You regret coming back.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't matter the size of the butter tart. I'll eat it. Because it's a butter tart.
Okay, so you're telling me... Hold on! So you're telling me that you would eat a butter tart if it was the size of a pie?
Yeah.
Then you like pecan pie! You like sugar pie!
No, I like butter tarts.
No, you like you like the flavor of butter tarts, but you like...
I like butter tarts.
Megan has you here by the short hairs. That's
no,
no.
I'm pulling them. I'm gonna pull them. I'm gonna yank those hairs out, bro. Okay, I've got you pinned.
My answer.
I was with you this entire time until you said that you would size up to any size. If you'll go up to pie size on a butter tart, you like pie.
No, I like butter tarts.
That's what sugar pie is.
Butter house.
It's a butter tart.
No, I like butter tarts.
Kyle, I'm with you. No matter the size, it's a butter tart. Size doesn't make the food.
Yes, it does.
It does.
You see, it's,
when you
it's...
when you change the size of several foods, you classify it as a different thing. No. Like a hot pocket to a panzerotti and such. Like there's a difference.
A hot
box
is a hot pocket, no matter what size it is.
Mm-mm.
Chris,
now I want to know.
The least culinary out of everyone here.
When it comes to Hot Pockets, I am the most.
Hot Pockets are a pie. It's a hand pie. It's a hand pizza pie. My question is, Kyle, is what do you like in your butter tarts? Do you like them with raisins? Do you like them with
butter tart filling?
Just plain butter tart. No pecans, no raisins, just butter tart.
Just butter tart.
So what you would eat is sugar pie. It's literally just called
what
sugar
I eat is butter tart.
Pie. It's sugar pie.
No.
Butter tart is literally just a miniature
I think you're
sugar
mistaken.
Pie. I'm gonna leave my body. I'm gonna astral project right now. And I'm gonna come down the street. I'm gonna choke you with my ghost hands.
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but I believe you're calling it a butter tart. So therefore, it's butter tart.
What if I give you a butter tart pie?
No. I don't want that.
What if I gave you a butter tart that was, let's say, like 5-inch diameter, so it's like a decent size, and a butter tart pie that was also 5-inch in diameter, and I mixed them up and I gave you a slice of each and said, here's a butter tart. Would you eat both slices?
Okay, so
I'm sorry, I stopped paying attention.
So here's the thing, Andrew. You're literally calling it a butter tart pie.
Yeah.
Like the butter tart is a completely different thing.
There are two.
You can't say...
I can label similar looking things, two different things. I can double label something. But if I mix them up and I say, there's a butter tart and a butter tart pie here, would you eat one of the slices?
No, I would
not called
leave.
A butter tart pie. It's called a sugar pie.
No, butter tart pie is actually a thing. I'm on Google right now.
Okay, no, and it's just sugar pie.
I'll just leave.
You would just leave?
This is too much work for
me. He would see the two slices on the table, and he would just be like, no, and then he would just leave.
Yeah, no, I know what this is.
I've played this game before.
This is a trap to get me to say things.
I've played Knifey Spoonie before.
I know you, TMZ. I know your tactics.
Okay, what is everyone's favorite pie? Kyle, you don't count. We know it's sugar pie, so we've established this.
I don't like pie.
That's your favorite pie, sugar pie. Chris also doesn't like pie. Do you like shepherd's pie?
I don't like food. Nope.
No.
Chris doesn't like food.
I believe, Chris, we could arrange something into a shape of a pie that you would like. It would just be crust and cheese, but you'd be like, yeah.
So it's just a grilled cheese.
Yes, but it arranged in the shape of a pie. We can rearrange things to be pie. That's doable. There, like most foods, you can take and turn into a pie. There's like a universal pie-ness to things.
Isn't there a Red Link episode, Will It Pie?
Doesn't everything pie? And as long as it's like an usually edible thing?
I think the one thing that didn't pie was blood.
Yeah, and the British do like blood pudding.
Blood pie.
Yeah, like blood pie is a thing. It's just not for us.
Okay, for vampires.
So Chris, you like apples, right?
I don't like apple pie. I know where this is going.
No. What if I like hollowed out an apple and then I like put it in the oven for like a little bit and then I put a little bit of like caramel on it or something?
I don't like caramel.
Okay, what if I put cinnamon on it?
Don't like cinnamon.
What if I put my fist in it and then I punched you with the hot apple?
That sounds like a date. Let's go.
Let's go.
What if I took pretty much a bread dough and I put it in a pie crust and I just filled it with a whole bunch of cheese and we baked that and it's going to be a cheese pie. It's just going to be bread and cheese.
Isn't that a grilled cheese?
It's just grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese is inherently grilled. This is not grilled. This has been baked.
You can bake a grilled cheese.
You just bake grilled cheese.
Shenanigans. Got to be grilled. It's Why? Called a grilled cheese. It is in
nothing.
The name. A grilled cheese must be grilled.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, absolutely. No, there's no...
No.
It's in the name. You have to grill a grilled cheese. I'm giving him a baked cheese pie.
So grilled
Andrew,
cheese.
Andrew, would you like the recipe for baked grilled cheese? I can there's several ones here that I can send you for baked grilled cheese.
That's a baked grilled cheese. That's not a grilled cheese.
It's a grilled cheese, but it's baked, so it's a baked grilled cheese.
No, that
I
is
think
a baked
as long
grilled
as you,
cheese, not a grilled
as
cheese.
As long as you, like, seal the edges of said grilled cheese, kind of like a Hot Pocket, and then you put it in the oven, it is a pie. It is like a hand pie.
Ah, yeah, hand pie.
Okay, my question is a pig in a blanket a pie?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But you did Why ask not? About favorite.
Come on.
Rob, what's your favorite pie?
Strawberry rhubarb.
Interesting. That's a very localized one. I don't.
That is a good pie.
Strawberries with the tartness of the rhubarb, they complement each other very well. Also, I just really, really, really like rhubarb.
Is don't that
you
remember
at your last place? I would just take some.
Yeah, rhubarb is like a nature's treat around here, where you'll just find like a bunch of patches of rhubarb growing in like a back lane, and you're like, oh, okay.
if you see me foraging around like West Fort back alleys for rhubarb and fiddleheads and lilacs, just mind your business.
I just imagine like making like knee deep in a bush. Someone goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" Megan just pops up.
And, like full raccoon cosplay.
So just normal Megan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys got me. That's literally me.
I would say lemon meringue pie is my favorite pie, but then I have the argument that cheesecake is a pie, and thus it would be cheesecake, because cheesecake is not a cake, it is a pie. It has a crust, and it has things on top of it. Cakes have no crust. Cheesecake also, has a crust.
That is actually
is
wise.
Yeah, it's not a pie.
Also,
that is wise.
Is round, cake is square.
No, you can have...
Cakes can be round.
Cakes can round be any cakes. Shape. Rob, they have entire baking shows dedicated to putting cakes into different shapes. Cakes have layers. Pies.
I just want to see Kyle's
so
face.
An onion
have a crust
is a cake?
With filling. Cakes do not have a crust, though.
Shrek is a cake.
Is an onion a cake?
No, it's an onion.
It has layers.
It has layers, but it's more than that. Like, that is just one of the attributes of a cake. A cake is also going to involve... like usually dessert, but it's going to like involve like, you know, like cake, like actual cake of some sort.
Actual,
because we're talking
flour.
I gotta talk about the fun story of instant cakes. So when the guy Betty Crocker's company invented instant cakes, it was literally just the powder and the milk and the water, and that was it. But people didn't buy them because people felt way too guilty because it was too easy. There was nothing to it.
It felt wrong and unnatural to make a cake that didn't have anything in it.
So, Betty Crocker, without changing the formula, just said, throw in an egg and some oil. There is absolutely no reason, even today, you don't need that egg, you don't need that oil. That's just extra steps because they didn't want you to feel too lazy.
That's amazing. I love that.
But that's also like, it's an interesting leftover, and I think, I wonder how many people just stopped putting things in, like, maybe that's just a sales conspiracy by Betty Crocker to make lazier people still make cakes, but in a way that's easier.
Oh no, there's a whole food theory about it, like when the
but things, I'm curious, started. I'm curious after that, what happened with Betty Crocker's sales? Did Betty Crocker's sales go up because people realized they didn't need to use the egg and the oil, and Betty Crocker just let loose their secret just by accident to increase sales? It's devious,
so,
Rob. Rob, I've decided it's devious.
but you're getting the history wrong, so it's not devious.
Yes, it is. History doesn't matter with conspiracies, Rob. It's true because I said it.
Obviously, Betty Crocker was like actually helping the like the poultry industry by being like, "Oh, you need eggs to make this," and then
no one asked about big chicken
went up.
Megan.
Yeah, no one asked about big poultry. Okay, so then they were like, "Yeah, you got to add eggs to this." Did Betty Crocker save the poultry industry? Some ancient alien researchers say yes.
That's true. I've heard that. I've heard that recently.
Hey, Kyle, is this how you feel when we do the pie thing with you?
I just kind of tune it out. I just listen to old Catholic hymns in my head until something pulls
no.
me back.
Oh, gosh, no.
Oh, you're lying. We know you're listening to, like, early 2000s emo music.
It's not a phase, Mom.
Countrified emo stuff.
Hey man, Missouri business. It's a good time.
I posted this to Andrew or to Megan and Kyle. I want to know Andrew's thoughts. So if there is a Mothman, that implies that there was a larva boy and a cocoon teen.
Depends on what type of Mothman we're talking about. So are we talking about the supernatural Mothman, or are we talking about, like, the DC villain Mothman?
We are talking about Mothman who was at Point Pleasant.
Like the cryptid?
Okay. The cryptid. Yes. So in that case, yes, I there would have to be Baby Maggot too, wouldn't there?
That's what Larva Boy is.
Maggot's smaller than a larva, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not part of the same family. Maggot is a fly. Larva is a worm and a moth.
Okay, fair.
So it's Larva Boy, Cocoon Teen, Mothman.
Oh, man, Cocoon.
See, what I said was, like, we don't know how they form. It could be, like, a Kadabra-type situation where the kid just woke up one day and he was Mothman.
That's true. That is true. We are assuming that Mothman is a naturally occurring creature, and if he is, Mothman may be a thing of dark magic or of interdimensional things that, to us, the best way that we can recognize it is comparing it to a moth. But, you know, maybe that's really insensitive to Mothman.
It might be. What I want to know is, why is a jackalope a cryptid? It's just a bunny with antlers. Like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a little bunny with antlers. How? And it's just, like, grouped in with all these scary, spooky things.
Cryptids are scary.
How is that a cryptid? Yeah. Jackalope is not scary and spooky. It's a bunny rabbit with antlers.
Yeah. Mothman isn't scary and spooky. He's trying to help people. People just didn't listen to him.
Yeah, I mean, not all cryptids are, like, you know... Cryptid is just essentially like a rare ultra-natural supernatural beast. It is a thing of myth and legend. So, like, it doesn't have to be inherently dangerous. There can definitely be a lot of cute cryptids. I would argue there are quite a few. Well, I mean, depending on the culture, because, I mean, like, fairies would be cryptid, but depending on where you go.
I finally get to talk about
him again. Ooh, the
fame. The squonk.
What's a squonk?
A squonk is a American creature. I think it's from Arkansas. That is so ugly. It always cries about how ugly it is. And if you see it, you'll die because it's so ugly.
I'm trying my hardest not to be a joke.
I'm glad you found something to relate to, Rob. You know, I...
thank you. I didn't want to do it.
happy Pie Day. Okay.
From pies to squonk.
Quonk just sounds like a racial slur.
It's not quonk. It's squonk.
I said squonk.
Oh, it's not like you said quonk.
No, quonk is the dude from Emperor's New Groove.
That's quonk.
Well, you know what I like? I like things that go bonk. And recently, Rob, our favorite sport wrapped up. And oh,
that
wow.
Was right.
not only none of us were right, this was the most surprising season I think we've had, especially since a lot of the heavy hitters of last seasons, including like the two-time previous champion Bite Force, weren't involved. And man, did things go way differently than I thought they would.
Yeah, heck, Tombstone didn't even make it that far this year, and Tombstone's, like, the biggest heavy hitter. Yeah.
Complete upsets. So, when it comes to, you know, our picks and how we got knocked out, I'm sorry to say, Megan, that you got hoofed out right away with Perfect Phoenix.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I feel for the youngin, however, I think it was more inexperience in the battle box, because this was his first time. Because the main thing
he's
that
10.
He's 10. The main thing he kept doing was just overheating his weapon and taking it out. And once his weapon's gone, he doesn't have much offensive power. As he gets more skilled with that robot and fine tunes it, like, this kid's gonna go far, because he did build an incredibly tough, destructive robot. It just
not
needs.
Not like that, but he did make it to the top 32, which is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
Achoo.
And his first time driving as a Jedi, like, I'm excited to see next year what this kid does, because now that he's been in the box, he's gonna fine tune and, like, look at all his weaknesses, and I'm hoping he becomes the next, like, Destructor, where he just tears bots apart for fun.
I was generally surprised at how well Chris's choice did, because Chris only chose his because it's a funny name.
I didn't even want to pick one. I was just like, Ribot.
Yeah, and you made it pretty far, even beating my guy, Uppercut.
Not surprising.
It was because, yeah, Rob, I was excited to see what was going to happen with Uppercut. It was the fourth seed, so, and it had massive knockouts this year, and, like, you know, we had an explosion. It, like, 2 second a robot and just knocked it out of the arena. It's like, oh, well, damn.
Yeah, and honestly, the only reason Ribot won is because something went wrong with the drive track and he got stuck.
Yeah, he just got stuck on something and Ribot could still move. Like, it was totally ripped apart, and
especially... It was missing two wheels! Two wheels! It was still
That's
moving.
Fine, amphibians can grow limbs back.
He's right. And, you know, just in case we thought it was a fluke, you know, Ribot made it all the way up, I think, until, like, the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So it's kept winning. It won its next fight as well, where it's just, this bot, half of it falls apart, but the part that has to be strong, the weapon keeps working, and even without wheels, it's still moving on its own power. So it's like, oh, well, I guess it keeps to get keep going, and the other robots just keep breaking before it.
Cursed frog. Yeah.
We need to head to our first break here, folks, but keep that dial locked to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible, and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is supported in part by the students of Lakehead University, our sponsors, and our listeners. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Copperfin Credit Union, Northwestern Ontario's largest locally owned credit union. Experience the convenience of their mobile banking app and online financial solutions anywhere, anytime. Copperfin Credit Union. Life forward. Sarah Curtin, your neighborhood realtor. She's on top of what's happening in Thunder Bay's market, and she'll help you buy or sell your home. Call or text her anytime at 632-3635 or find her online at sarahcurtin.com. The Walleye, the definitive source for information on music, food, art, and entertainment in Thunder Bay. This month's issue is on stands for free now. Find it around town or online and interactive at thewalleye.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM, CILU, or around the world at luradio.ca.
Then we got Kyle, who actually made it pretty far out of all of us. See, Kyle, aren't you glad that you had to leave the choice of Uppercut and move up in the world?
Well, I mean, I just went for a number one seat.
To be fair, Hydra, which is just, you know, the premier flipper, made it as far as Ribot, which is kind of hilarious. It kind of it raises the standards of Ribot, you know, significantly, considering it was kind of a gag robot in the first season where it didn't have any top. It just had foam and it was meant to go up in flames. But Hydra got hit out by one of, like, the more technical bots that it's theoretically always had the potential to go very far, but there were just a couple robots that kept getting matched with, like, Bite Force that was taking it out, and Whiplash, which is kind of also a flipper, but with a disc on top of it, and...
Whiplash is a smart bot because it's got two primary weapons, so if one fails, it can still fall back on the other.
Yeah. It was one of the ones where it's... we probably should have been paying more attention to it, but because it's been, you know, hit hard in previous seasons. It just wasn't as interesting. The one that I was hoping was going to go real far, the one that in my heart I wanted to pick, but I knew, or at least I thought it would have been a stupid choice, was Mammoth, the Yeetbot.
It made it further than I thought. I didn't even originally think it made it to the 32. And then I was looking at the thing, and I'm like, oh, you actually are here.
Mammoth won a fight, and I think it did pretty well, where the entire idea is that it's just this giant mess of pipes with a big sort of frame on the front that just tries to pick up a robot and just yeet it, just by sheer massive size. And most robots have no idea what to do with it. It's like, oh, where do we even attack this thing? Like, the poles? If we go at it, then it just goes, vroom. But they've refined their style enough where that first fight, I felt like they legitimately won.
Yeah, and they did make it to the top 16, which is, again, impressive considering I didn't even think it would make it to the 32.
I was hoping, like, when it lost against the big Hammerbot Shatter, I was kind of like, yeah, Shatter broke his weapon, but... It was a split decision. I was cheering. I was pulling, like, come on, Mammoth, to the quarterfinals. I want to see Mammoth win the big nut.
That would be great. Like, here's the thing. I remember looking at the team of the Faces of Mammoth when they won against Copperhead. They weren't joyful. They were confused. They're like, we won?
They scored more points. Sometimes, sometimes it just comes down to having control of a fight the entire time. Being the most aggressive, and because he scored enough points with his flipper, it's just, it came down to a technical, which is part of BattleBots as well. So if you don't have a knockout, you can still box your way into a victory just by causing damage and just getting enough hits and getting points racked up, and Mammoth managed to do that. My pick, honestly, I disagree with the first decision. I think Bloodsport should have lost to Gruff. Even though Gruff was real rough, and I think they probably chose to knock out Gruff on a shenanigan because it didn't seem that they had enough parts to fix their robot from the regular season fights. Bloodsport's weapon broke in the first fight. Like, just...
Yeah. I was surprised.
And then Tantrum, which made it up, I think, to the semifinals. Honestly, it was outdriven, and Bloodsport lost fair and square.
Before we talk about the big winner, I want to talk about something different that they did this year that I'm very appreciative towards.
Oh, what's
that? They renamed the best new design to the Imahara Award.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they didn't do. This year was the Desperado tournament. Instead of having 16, they expanded out to 32. So there was no point to a six-way battle royale. Whoever wins gets into it. But, like, they seem to replace that with giving out different awards. And the Grand Imahara one it's a nice touching thing because he is so big within, like, Makerspace and within going from Mythbusters to BattleBots, kind of a celebrity.
There's a really fun video online. Adam Savage has been, like, answering questions from his Patreon every day and uploading the answers. And he told the story about Grant before they were Mythbusters, that they still worked together at Industrial Light and Magic. Apparently one day NSYNC visited him because they were huge BattleBots fans and they were geeking out over Grant Imahara.
Oh, that's...
And Adam was just, like, there in the corner, and he's like, really? NSYNC likes BattleBot?
Who doesn't?
I know, but it's like, can you imagine you're just at work, and NSYNC starts fanboying over you?
Right? But, I mean, BattleBots is just, it's one of those events and shows that I just really enjoy, because it's both, like, technical and visceral, and... You never really know what's going to happen. Like, the winner for this season, like, deserved it. And it came down to Whiplash, who's the one that knocked out Kyle, and Endgame, whose big achievement this year is they went up against Tombstone in the regular season and just shut them. Just straight up, like, there was no... There was no, like, you know, dancing around. They just went and beat Doomstone, just boof, yeeted him out, made him look like nothing, and his confidence seemed shook the rest of the season. But, I mean, it's... Endgame has enough similarity to a robot like Bite Force that I'm hoping next year that maybe we see a return and just see what happens when he's back in the mix.
That'd be cool. I also do like the fact that even the announcer said, it's like, Endgame is the first non-American winner.
I did.
They're from New Zealand. Like, there's been a lot
New
of...
New Zealanders are being hired, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked to many New Zealanders, and I think we feel that kinship that we... When living in the shadow of a larger country or a larger economy, when you...
Your angry older brother.
Your angry older brother. When you have a chance to make a stand, you make a stand. And wow, Endgame... Just a beautiful performance this season, and it's really impressive. I'm excited to see what's going to happen with the next year with things shaken up. And BattleBots, because they had so many competitors there, is one of those live shows that still felt like it had a studio audience because you had everyone there cheering. But seeing other types of shows doing rather, like, you know, no audience, where it's all deadly silent and they're all used to
UFC is so awkward.
Yeah.
Oh my, like, I watched the most recent one and I was just like, you hear their awkward slapping of the skin together, then you're just like, I know people are supposed to cheer right now, but it's just like that one guy off to the side that's like, yeah, you could do it.
And it's not the same without, like, it's not the same without, like, the booing as well. Like, you know, there's obviously going to be some upsets. And it's just like, applauding and happiness the entire time. There's no, like, oh, boo, our team is losing.
Well, it's the same reason why, like, a lot of sitcoms had laugh tracks. It's that part of the experience of watching a live event is doing it with sort of like a community, like, you know, communal feel where, you know, the emotions are guided by the group in some sense, you know, where you have people cheering and booing and upsets and such like that. But the freakiest one that I saw was what they did on the Masked Dancer. They just faked that an audience was there. Just there was no audience, and they were straight up like, no, we are editing footage of audience in here, and it's like the same five shots every episode. So you start to realize, like, I've seen that a couple times, and the entire thing's decided by an audience vote. So it's also kind of like, okay, you know, there's not an audience there. No one's actually voting. It's just predetermined. It's always been predetermined with a lot of these shows, which ones that are going to move up when it comes to, like, reality celebrity competition shows. But this sort of, spooky, surreal, not real audience just kind of freaks me out, because it's like, ooh, I don't like when it's put on Front Street. I need to be lied to a little bit more, or else this feels dirty.
Yeah, what I was going to say about Penn and Teller, what they did is they're still doing Fool Us, mm-hmm. but instead of having an audience behind them, they pretty much have this giant screen and people are watching from home. And you just see, like, hundreds and hundreds of people, like, on webcam watching and reacting.
Oh, man, you know.
Oh, that's no. So weird.
No, that freaks me out. That reminds me of that freaky Apple commercial with all the TVs and just, no, we have that, but I don't, it's temporary. As a temporary fix, okay. But it's,
I mean,
at least, I'll give credit, at least it's better than openly faking an audience and telling everyone's like, there is no audience here. And you can see that, because, like, again, it was like the same set part of shots every episode that was kind of the same. But, like, oh man. And they do that anyways. Like, anytime you're gonna have, like, enhanced cheering and booing depending on the stories that, like, producers want to influence into it. And I assume that happens less with sport, but maybe not, because those ads aren't usually on the field.
I'm not going to lie. The first time I saw, like, those kind of, like, projected ads when they're running by them,
mm-hmm.
I thought they invented, like, LCD grass or something. My brain didn't register. It's easier to edit than it is just to make a fake lawn that can project things.
Now, here's the thing. I'm not doubting that there won't eventually be LCD grass where it'll just be bioluminescent. We will have some freaky grass of nature on our sports fields. Because if there are two things that drive a lot of spending and innovation, it is sport and conquest, which is also
gotta have those nice arenas, man.
You know what? I love
everything's
battle
just
bots
gonna be holograms.
Battle bots is real.
I can't wait
someone wins and loses, I at least believe the judges felt that way. Even when I disagree with them, I'm like, I can see what their point is. I think they're wrong, but I see what their point is. Other sports, though, are they real? Is battle bots really the truest of humanities?
No, other sports are real. You just bro dudes and dudettes fighting each other.
But is it an enhanced reality?
Some ancient alien researchers say.
You know, Chris, I've heard that recently.
Yeah.
I saw it on the news.
I think. Facebook.
You know what
news,
I want?
Same thing.
I just want the next league cable besides food. I just want the next League of Legends tournament to have RGB grass just on the field.
They don't play on fields.
Well, like, you can slap on some like turf onto the stage.
They played in an underwater like arena of skyscrapers last time.
Hold on.
How's that? A big cube of LEDs.
I have a solution. You know those Christmas trees, like those miniature ones that you can buy that have like the little fibers and then the ends, like the little tips of them glow like the rainbow colors?
Yes.
Yeah. Like
a bunch of those.
Okay. So like a whole mat just covered in those little like fibers. It's like a shag carpet, but it's rainbow. It's a rainbow grass carpet.
Kyle, don't
fiber optic shag carpet.
You want...
Yes!
If Razer made an RGB shag carpet, you would want it.
See, my only issue with all of these things being RGB is inherently there's like glass or something in them. So like you'd go to like lay down on your nice RGB carpet and just be like shredded.
No,
you're right, Kyle. I do have a lot of muscles. I do have a lot of muscles.
I mean, I don't have everyone here yet.
you know what? I mean,
you're very strong.
We did try to figure out who would survive in a battle royale, and I'm like, if it's just us, not me, I'm gonna die very soon. I don't have the power to draw first blood.
I am convinced.
Imagine hold on. Okay. Imagine decimating all your friends to going on to living a fulfilling life of sitting on the computer and playing World of Warcraft.
Excuse me. I feel like something about this is targeted at somebody.
I recognize the plot of Sword Art Online, Megan.
Megan's dying first in the arena.
See,
because the way I look at it is like we all had different health bars, and I'm convinced that out of everyone here, I may not be able to throw the best punch, but I could take the most punches.
I agree, Rob.
I'll punch you once, and you got laid out.
Yeah, but
I was about to be like, you remember how I like punched you? You hit the floor.
That was a sucker punch.
You know what? It depends.
No, that was a punch. You deserved it.
It was kind of a sucker punch.
Well, and also, Rob, in a battle royale, sucker punches are allowed. So, you know, they might, you know, Kyle would walk up to you proposing like an alliance and then sucker punch you, and you'd be out.
Whoa, no. I use him first.
Against
me. I know how to use people.
I receive self-defense. I receive self-defense tips and self-defense like fighting tips from an individual who is much larger than all of us on a regular basis. So I think I know what I'm doing.
I fight dirty. Yeah,
you're not an individual that's larger on a regular basis.
That's fair, but I mean, takedowns. Muay Thai, Kyle.
Yeah, you just got a strawberry basket, them.
Yeah.
Punch him square in the dink.
Yeah, okay. And here's the thing, Kyle. Kyle is at a great disadvantage against all of us because if a breeze rolls in and hits him in the nuts, he's done. He's down for the count.
My sensitive genitalia is not a disadvantage, Megan.
Paper sensitivity.
Snot to disadvantage.
It's going to be the winner in the end. His lens will just keep coming and coming and coming and coming.
Chris would just be standing on the sidelines eating a grilled cheese until we all kill each other to death. And he'd be like, wow, look at me. I'm the last one left. And then he would loot all of our bodies for like rings and stuff. And then he would just be taking all of Andrew's cool overshirts after.
His consoles, what do you mean?
Oh, right. That hadn't even occurred to me. Wow.
See, my big caveat was if it's just us, I couldn't do it. If I killed a few people first, so if it was like us and other people and like it was sort of a Hunger Games situation, so I'm like 10 people killed in, so I have the bloodlust. Oh man, you know what? No, I'm good to murder all of y'all. But if it's just us five and I'm like, okay, fight to the death, I'm like, oh man, no, I need to build my bloodlust XP first before I can let it out. Like it's just not innate.
See, I'd
that's
go
fair.
For...
And I think that's very honest. That's fair and honest.
I would try and go for Kyle first, because out of everyone here, because Kyle even admitted he's good at manipulating people.
He's a cult leader. What do you expect?
Yeah, you openly started this saying you're good at manipulating people, and you manipulate them against me. So I'd go after you first.
And you censor that, too? No one needs to hear that?
Otherwise, he loses power. Well,
no.
Oh, that's the thing is like Kyle's defense gonna be is shh, don't talk about it or it doesn't work.
It's weird. Okay, Chris, you know what's the weird thing though?
What?
People love being dominated. So it doesn't matter if you tell them that I'm using them, they'll just be like, no.
Thank you,
Dan. I know better.
Kyle, they might give you tips and offer advice.
Tips and tricks. I want one of my members to slide up to me one day and tell me about like a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater tour.
Give you a sponsor about Raid Shadow Legends in the middle.
That man's going places if someone slips me a Raid Shadow Legends promotion in the middle of a fight.
I think my only hope is to play a defensive game until a couple people are dead. Because like if it's down to like me and like one-on-one, I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I'm going to have to do whatever I'm going to have to do because they just killed the other three. So I think I'm just going to run because I'm at least faster. So like it depends on arena size here. I think there's some factors.
Just like, where are you going? It's a cage match, buddy.
It's a cage match. I am going to try to be dodgy and slithery and wormy and try to just not get caught and chased while other people take themselves out. And that'd be my only hope.
I'm going to grab and run your face along the chain link fence.
Be careful.
Like a cheese grater.
Exactly. I've seen it on WWE. I've watched so many cage matches. It doesn't even. You don't even know.
We're talking about like a WWE sized cage match. I have a little room to maneuver.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
But I mean,
I just imagine like Andrew crawling to the top of the cage, Kyle at the bottom going, "Get down here!" And Andrew just turned down. No.
I can be the first dead very easily, but if someone is already dead, then things are real, and then I'm willing to fight very dirty, so, like, you know, I'm gonna go for the eyes.
I feel like the best way, I think the best way for us to actually, like, reenact this without actually killing each other is, like, a free-for-all dodgeball match.
What the...
No, I throw terrible.
We're all fat people. What do you mean?
Oh, yeah.
Again, I feel like the best way to reenact this without actually killing one another is a free-for-all dodgeball match. See, I think like, that it would be the best simulation. The best simulation without actually getting, like,
physical. I just say we play shot for shot until the last person taps out.
Yeah, like, Megan, I have to call shenanigans here. I think that you argue for dodgeball just because you have a distinct particular advantage.
I'm not good at dodgeball.
Do
you know what I can't do it? You know what I can't? You know what I can't do in shot for shot? You know what I can't do in shot for shot or dodgeball? Choke a man to death, okay? So, I don't think shot for shot would be a very good way of, like, you know, demonstrating how this would actually play out. I think the dodgeball match would be a very good way of showing how this would play out, because you could ping someone right in their stupid face.
Hold on, Megan, I throw terribly.
So here's my favorite bit of this. I'm with Megan only because I remember when we went to Anime North and we did the bow and arrow dodgeball.
Yes. See what I mean?
I killed Andrew.
Yeah, like I'm a terrible shot. It's different.
You would be like the last one left, and you're just like, and you're all like hopped up on adrenaline, and you're trying not to get hit by like four other kids, and you're just like,
I don't even care.
One of my most happy, pissed off Andrew moments. I always remember because Andrew was running. I saw his back. I shot. It hit him in the back. I hear him go, ugh. And then I yell, gotcha. And Andrew just yells because he knew that I got him. He would have been mad if anyone else got him. But the fact that it was me just set him off.
I knew that I had taken a risk because I had no arrows to fire back. And like, there's like three of them right there. I'm going to run. I just bolted backwards, grab them. And then I just feel pong. And it had to have been like a very well-timed shot where it's just like, okay, yeah, I accepted that I had gotten hit. Like, I took the risk. It didn't work out. Like, I was completely exposed and my back turned to them. But then it was Rob that did it. Ugh. No, in dodgeball, I'm going to lose because I have no offensive power.
Okay, that's fair.
But that's also, you know what, that's relatable to a cage match because I have no offensive power. I even said that I'm going to be purely defensive. And you know what, Megan, maybe you have a point. Maybe we need to dodgeball.
Could use sock and boppers.
Please, no, I have trauma for sock and boppers. Those...
Those were very misleading.
The
desperation in your voice
in the commercials of how hard you could hit a kid, especially because like the commercials, just the kids hitting each other in the face with sock and boppers, which were just these big inflatable, not well constructed.
They were the best.
So it would have a blowout, and their fist would keep going. And
they allowed me to be violent with parental supervision.
How many have you popped over child's faces?
Okay, so we're okay now, but I broke somebody's glasses into their face.
Oh no,
because
you know what? No, they were wearing their glasses while using sock and boppers. That's on them. You're clear on that.
I needed more violence.
But like, have you ever popped a sock and bopper over someone's face?
Oh, it's very easy.
Yeah, how many times, Kyle? How many times?
90s parents would inflate them to like 400 psi so that they were like tiny explosive like devices on the end of your hand.
So it's like you get slapped before you got punched, but within like a millisecond, just like you're still processing the shock of a slap.
Well, because you're also suddenly... deaf because it just exploded in your face.
Yeah, and you're ringing, and then you just get freight trained by a fist.
Yes. I loved it.
I hated it because it was always my face that broke.
I was the kind of kid that would like get punched in the face and be excited and be like, let's go.
Having flashbacks of Kyle sucking on the devil's toe.
Yeah, I like fighting around the world.
Y'all ever sock him the bop?
No.
You're smart.
No.
I didn't, but do you guys ever do that thing where you're on the inflatable joust thing?
The inflatable what?
What?
The joust thing where it's like it's a pillar and you got this like joust rod and you have...
We did that at ThunderCon.
We've done that.
True story. First year I was at college, my sister was also there, and they had that set up. So me and my sister are like, hey, cool, an excuse to beat each other up. So we get on, we stand there, and the lady is running it. She's like, okay, rule one, no hitting each other in the face, me. Hey, Sandy! She looks at me, she's like, hey, no face shots. My sister looks at her and goes, no, I got this. And just knocks me out of the thing. That is how you sibling.
And that's why Rob's parents kept him away from Sock and Boppers. They probably censored the TV anytime the commercial came on, so Rob would not know the existence of Sock and Boppers. They're like, oh no, we must hide this from child, and they just, you know.
Oh, no.
That's when they'd feed Rob for like, oh, Rob, you know, have pierogi. And they would just distract Rob from the TV, and Rob would just be like, oh, and just distract him for the 30-second Sock and Bopper commercial where it looked like the most exciting thing and greatest thing ever. Just punch your friends in the face with no consequences. But then they, no, it was not a good time. It's not a good time. This is my now.
My dad saw the commercial. His reaction was, why do you need gloves? Just punch.
See, that's even better.
That's parenting.
What, you don't think me and my sister knocked each other on a regular basis?
Sure you did.
We need to head to our last break here, folks, but keep that dial locked to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU or around the world at luradio.ca.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk and Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Thunder Geeks, brought to you by 102.7 FM CILU or around the world at luradio.ca. I mean, speaking of fighting, Kyle, I finally took you down a rabbit hole of beautiful karate.
Good old American karate.
Oh, yeah. You see what I mean? You see what I mean? Because, like, yes, it has a long tradition, but you know what I love? I love me some good old-fashioned American karate.
Like, what? Johnny, why? That's all that show was just fighting around the world.
Karate is the, you know, is the cause and solution to all of life's problems. That's the main thing I learned. We, of course, I'm talking about Cobra Kai, and I am so happy this show got a chance at actual life and such, because it's a continuation of, like, the Karate Kid series, and I didn't realize how much I loved those movies and karate movies in general until I watched Cobra Kai, because I've talked about, like, fight action choreography on a regular basis, but man, do I love long-form series of just karate fight action.
It was surprisingly compelling. Because, yeah. you start to see from, like, both sides, Johnny and Danny's.
Yeah.
I don't remember much else beyond fighting.
There's a ton of fighting, and I've watched the series now in an inordinate amount of time. So what the series sort of plays on the idea of is the original Karate Kid movies, like, is the template for 80s sports movies. Like, after this came out, it also inspired a lot of movies that kind of used its plot beats, and especially, like, an entire action genre of kid karate movies as well that it, you know, Karate Kid started with. And it's, you know, you have your hero who's bullied by the, you know, big evil bully karate school in town that all of his bullies are a part of, and he's in love with the ex-girlfriend of one of the, you know, of the champion of the karate bullies. And of course, they end it all in a karate tournament where he wins with a spectacular crane kick to the face.
It's illegal.
That's one of the things that they do within this. And I was interested to see how you would react to it, because you haven't gone and seen the original Karate Kid movies. You just went through Cobra Kai, and it works as a series all upon its own.
Well, it's because they flash back to movies every like 30 seconds.
Okay, there are a lot of flashback montages. I'll be right on that.
A lot of flashbacks. You pretty much see the entire movie.
But it works. Essentially. Or at least the important beats about it. But what it does is it essentially, picks everything back up into their adulthood. So it mentions that, like, Johnny and Danny are now, like, the age in which Danny originally met Mr. Miyagi. And, of course, Pat Morita has, long since passed on. So a lot of the movie is processing just the ideas and themes that they set up in the first movie and how that plays out later. So the main character for this one is Johnny, who is, your stereotypical 80s bully, but now fully grown up, having to deal with life. You see where that sort of attitude got him, where he's a severe alcoholic who lives in the worst apartments in LA and just got fired.
He's like your typical listens to 80s rock music as there's a song every single episode.
We did say that like at least once per episode, you are going to get an 80s rock banger. And it's just the soundtrack of this show is they even manage to weave story beats in for the sections that they choose, where you're like, they picked a very specific song for a specific line that sets up and like kind of aligns with the themes of the show. It's like, man, they didn't just slap in like, oh, we have all these 80s rock songs to use, we're just gonna slap them in randomly. They have a lot of attention to detail that really shows throughout the series. And for someone like who rewatched all the original like movies and then went back into Cobra Kai, you see all of the stuff they kind of bring forward. And the big mirroring is that Johnny is now put in the mentorship role of seeing, a kid who's new to town, just like Daniel was, is getting bullied in school, and Johnny ends up, saving him outside of a mini mart. Not because he wanted to, help out the kid, it's because the bullies had pushed Miguel.
My car.
He's like, we're done. And he goes and like mirrors essentially the Mr. Miyagi fight with Daniel's bullies, but
it's my Firebird
in a completely different context, because reality piss hits into this, because after Johnny saves him, he goes to jail because he beat up a bunch of teenagers. Yeah, and that's something that I like that they continuously do, where they start taking things that are 80s tropes or things that kind of happened in the original movie and then apply more modern what's actually would happen if this, occurred, themes within to it. So, like, consequences. And one is that, Johnny goes to jail quite a few times.
That should just be the name of the show. Johnny goes to jail.
A few times.
Frequently. But a lot of the first...
Everyone goes to jail at some point.
Yeah, most of them. Most of them, or at least the hospital.
No, I thought you meant us.
there is a lot more hospital visits than there were in the first movie. And, like, the first season kind of follows the beats of that first movie, except in this, it's Johnny's quest to bring back Cobra Kai, and that all happens between him and his relationship with Miguel. And, like, the big sort of, like, trope of the original Karate Kid was that Mr. Miyagi taught Daniel all of his, karate, base by doing chores. Wax on, wax off, paint the fence, sand the floor.
You mean child labor.
Child labor. But like, that it was a big moment for the original movie where he's seeing, like, there was a deeper meaning to this. Where a lot of the first, few episodes is Johnny and Miguel, like, getting set up to like actually open the dojo because they have to go and fix it. But they also crack the jokes. It's like, no, I don't care how you do it. Like, the way that Johnny starts teaching him is very different, but also it's good old fashioned American karate. And it's really badass.
What, the one that Johnny does?
Yes. Cobra Kai.
You mean child abuse?
I mean, yes. But
you literally, like, you walked into the dojo, and if you were any way, shape, or form, like, let's take Hawk, for example. where you were literally made fun of to the point where you got a tattoo when you're like 16 years old.
I mean, but
to make yourself feel better.
But he's really cool now.
No, he's a dink.
He is.
Everyone in Cobra Kai is a dink.
Well, eventually. That eventually is what it, you know, develops into. But, I mean, if we take at least just the first season of Cobra Kai, because it eventually continues those ideas and, you know, you see what happens as that sort of toxic environment develops more. But, like, through the initial, like, Johnny's relationship with Miguel is positive both ways because Miguel helps Johnny learn, you know, how to live in a modern world. And even small things, it's fun to watch Johnny try to use a computer because it feels very much like helping your parents use a computer.
Are you connected to the Wi-Fi? Of course I'm connected to the Wi-Fi. What's a Wi-Fi?
And, well, I mean, you still have Johnny using different ways. So a lot of his is, you know, it's going to come down to, like, you know, a lot of knuckle push-ups, a lot of running. And then he does figure out, like, different ways. Like, he's using, like, the ball to shoot at people and try to block it. But at least the idea of you won't be able to take a punch unless you've had a punch. So line up, you're going to punch each other and you're going to get over that initial fear so then you can actually fight. I think that makes sense for like self-defense and like karate and such. You have to be able to take punches. So it's more of him also. And that thing is, that's also part of the problem that Johnny faces, where he's processing the ideals of Cobra Kai that he was taught and wanting to be better, not wanting to be what it was when he, you know, came up with it. He wants to promote karate that's really, you know, like cool in like the most 80s rockiness of sense. Like if you look at their exhibition that they did when they were trying to promote themselves, where you had, you know, the rival school that Daniel eventually starts with Miyagi-Do and teaching. We'll get into character relationships, but the way that Johnny presents karate is with rock music, flying kicks, and a lot of board breaking, and it's cool.
They like for the Miyagi-Do one, they bring out that ice like 30 times in the show, but they never actually break the ice.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a callback to the second movie where there is...
Wasn't that the third one?
No, this was the second movie. There is a third one. The third one, they even acknowledge, and the third one, all of that, everything you've seen in the main three Karate movies is canon to this. They reference it all. There is a fourth one, but they have not confirmed anything about Hilary Swank in the fourth one's events. It's pretty much disconnected from Daniel. So that one hasn't come up yet, but yes, Rob, I do know about the Hilary Swank next Karate Kid.
Oh, I'm sorry. No one should know about that one.
The second one is the one where they go to Okinawa and they actually diverged from what a lot of sequel movies do, where they just have the same plot over again. They have one that's much more elevated, where they go back to Okinawa and it is a Tomi village, and it's a very like traditional town, and it's very like a place that feels like it's trapped in time, and they have the whole thing of saving the village. But one of the things was at the bars, they have bets upon, you know, chopping through ice, and Daniel used his entire college fund to go with Mr. Miyagi because he was going back because his father was dying. And Mr. Miyagi ends up making a bet saying Daniel is going to chop through all five. And Daniel's like, no, like that guy is huge. He only made it through like 2.5. I can't do five. He's like, Daniel, all five. And he goes and he does it, you know, he collects all the money and goes, college fund, you know. So like,
I do remember that scene, but not because of the ice breaking, because Miyagi had a rival. And the rival had a son who didn't like Daniel, because of course. But the rival, the kid was like, I'm not paying you. And the dad was like, dude, pay him. And it's like, he didn't want to pay him, but it's like, he had the respect of, you did the thing, you get the money.
Yes, that is Sato and Chosen. And
he was in the show.
Everything from the first three movies is brought forward. Even ideas you didn't really think about before, where a lot of this show eventually develops into a commentary upon like PTSD and the trauma of being raised by war, because that's one of the things that both John Kreese and Mr. Miyagi had in common, that they were both war veterans, but had...
Oh, you mean the Nam season?
the very different, yes, like very different experiences where Mr. Miyagi fought, you know, for Okinawa in World War II, but even Miyagi-Do was developed as defending from invasion from foreign powers, where John Kreese, who starts, you know, started Cobra Kai and is, you know, the villain upon villains, goes through Nam, and you get to see what happened to him in Nam, and you go, yeah, you can see why Snake he pit. Never leaves the war.
Snake pit. They fight over a big snake pit, and they throw each other in. Snake pit.
And that's one thing that I really like about this series is that you also get to see different perspectives. Kyle, is she your favorite character as well? Where my favorite character in this show,
the wife,
is Daniel LaRusso's wife. She is the funniest and also the most like. So like, you know, you have them and they have like, you know, their big rivalry and it's built up to be the biggest thing. And then she just starts making fun of them. It's like, oh yeah, you know, they have their rival karate dojos, you know, battle for the soul of the valley. And she puts it in such perspective that it is just two sort of man children squabbling with each other.
Like she just destroys every single chance. She just destroys them.
And she's always also like, right. Where she's like, Daniel, this isn't what matters. What matters is our business. We're losing, you know, customers. We've lost our best salesman. Like, you keep missing work to go hang out with teenagers and teaching them karate and building them up for this big war. Like, you're even like, I'm waking up to an empty bed. None of this matters. And she puts 80s drama in such realistic perspective. It really grounds the show through her.
Can we acknowledge the amount of, like, Fight Club level crimes that start occurring in the show?
Yes, but that's also like 80s karate start, bullies.
Like, these kids start like arson. Just I was waiting for one of them to be named Bob. He has tits, you know. But like,
I mean, Stingray. I was just
waiting.
What about Stingray?
Stingray was cool.
I mean, wasn't Bob eventually cool? Not. I mean,
no, Bob died.
Okay, well, Stingray is better than Bob. We don't need Bob. We have Stingray.
Nobody's better than Bob.
So what I like for the show as well is that a lot of the like plot, you know, driven development is with the new kids, and some of it is in the idea of like that next generation of children. So you'll have Daniel's daughter involved, and then you have Johnny's son Robbie involved, and then you have Miguel, who is sort of our protagonist, especially through the first season, who kind of fulfills Daniel's role from the movies.
Dude, they're all Power Rangers.
Yeah, kind of.
They all just look like and feel like Power Rangers.
Oh, I mean, absolutely, but Power Rangers were also teens that did karate. And by teens, I mean 35-year-olds. But this one is actually teens. That's
what Robbie looks like.
Okay, Robbie.
Robbie looks like he's 40 years old. Like he's like some greaser kid that just showed up and they're like, yeah, we'll give him a role.
He's a teenager, but he does look.
Like that kid looks like he's going to like wake up in bed with your mom.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
He gets ripped.
They're all ripped.
Right?
I'm pretty sure then the girls like take the shirt off and they're like,
oh yeah, 12 pack abs.
The girl just like destroyed a quarter when she fell on it. Like, Jesus.
But I do like the pretty much they sort of have that teen drama. It develops much more within the second season as well, where like the different relationships that, you know, come into play here. My favorite character arc, at least, he's not my favorite character, but at least my favorite arc is Eli, aka Hawk, where the journey his character and that actor goes on, where he is like the biggest loser among the little loser group that they have with Miguel, Eli, and
he had a lip.
Yeah, he has a cleft lip, and it was even worse, and like you actually get to see like the incenting incident when he was getting bullied by like the bullies that were bullying all of them.
Nerd.
where you see the phone call Eli's mom makes to the school saying, hey, stop making fun of his lip. And then you have the teacher come out during, you know, lunchtime in the cafeteria saying, you know, there's been some reports recently of people making fun of other people's facial deformities, and that's really, you know, not cool, and we have to learn to be like the worst thing. It makes bullying so much worse for that person because everyone knows whose mom called the school and such. But then Hawk flips the script. And that's one of the things that Johnny teaches him. It's like, okay, like if you want people to not make fun of that, you have to turn it into a strength. And Hawk ends up becoming, you know, the epitome of badassery. Hawk, at least through the first season, he's badass.
Kyle, what was that quote by Peter Dinklage in season one of Game of Thrones with Jon Snow? About, like, take what they call you and wear it as armor and then they can never hurt you? I'm paraphrasing. But like,
Yes.
I feel like that
kind of applies here. But also there's another aspect of it where they reference him briefly, but if you take his entire character arc through that lens, you also see the problem of just trying to instill the ideology that worked so well for Miguel to build himself up and be strong, and where it can be taken to, and that you see that with Hawk, where they mention, like, you know, that Hawk might be somewhere on the spectrum. So he goes from, like, a nerdy kid that's into Doctor Who and, like, goes to science camp to being, like, obsessed with being, like, the toughest and the coolest. So, yeah, where he, you know, gets a mohawk, his cleft lip now looks like a battle scar. He gets this beautiful hawk with also a mohawk tattooed on his back, and he makes the wings flap, and it's pretty awesome.
He is like 15. How is he affording these tattoos? Where is he like going?
You want to go for yourself, don't you?
Well, if a kid is like 15 can afford to change his tattoo like 6 times through the show.
He knows a guy.
He is the guy.
If he could tattoo his own back, that's actually super impressive for various reasons.
But thing is, the big thing with Hawk is when you switch over, because at the end of season one, the big stinger is that John Kreese isn't dead and he comes back and he gets involved with Cobra Kai for season two. So you see a lot of those older, more extreme, born from trauma
really
in the war.
One?
Yeah. The end of season one is Kreese shows up and goes,
"Oh my God,
we're just getting started." That's where you see Hawk really take a turn, where he goes from, you know, he also gets disqualified in the tournament because he goes too far. You see him go to the most extremes where he's trying to be like the toughest, the most ruthless. And he's also like making those like bullying and bad decisions where like he's trashing other people. He's harassing them at work. He's openly assaulting, you know, who used to be his friends. And you watch him go through this whole like arc of darkness.
Who's the nerd kid that he beats up a bunch of times?
I'm trying to remember his name because he gets his arc as well.
Dimitri,
yes. So Dimitri is like, I like Dimitri's character in this role. I don't like Dimitri. But Dimitri's whole purpose is like, you know, they've made the, you know, solution here, karate for everyone. But what about a kid that is just kind of a wuss like Dimitri? Like, Dimitri isn't tough. He doesn't like fighting. He doesn't like getting hit in the face. He doesn't like pain. And he's not that coordinated. He's long and gangly. He's an awkward kid. And I like seeing that, you know, where all of the other characters just got to, you know, paint some fences and suddenly they're good at karate too. Dimitri's not. He has to work very, very hard to get, you know, any progress.
He just gets beat up for like an entire season and a half.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to watch. It's fun to watch neuroticism. Like the whole season where they're trading in like the hottest and coldest and just watching Dimitri get like kicked in a circle over and over again.
You literally just watch this kid get beat up for like a season and a half until one day he's just like, suddenly karate master.
And the thing is, like, the way they set everything up, like, it is a loving tribute to the original series, and I'm happy to also learn that, like, you don't need that original series. There is enough context given from the backstory to pull everything forward, and it was a miracle this show got to continue at all, because the first two seasons were on YouTube Red, which I think this was one of the few series that were ordered that weren't coming from a YouTuber as well, where it was coming from like a pre-existing property. And what they did with YouTube Red money was fantastic. Thankfully, YouTube was really cool to them, saying it's like, okay, you know what? You have two seasons. You have like more show to do. You were the kind of the only successful show that we had of YouTube Red. You can own yourself. So they sold themselves to Netflix to get the third and fourth season funded. So they're going to be able to complete the entire series, but it's only because Netflix stepped in that they get to, you know, continue the series at all.
Ah, Netflix, thank you for so much great and weird stuff.
Yeah, and like there's so much more to the show that like we haven't really touched on, but like a lot of it is just pulling forward themes from that original, you know, series, like incidences of, you know, trauma from war, trauma from losing parents, because that's something that's common with all of these characters, that you have a past or absent father figure, and also seeing people grow through a discipline and the different ways that they'll grow depending upon what they're given. Because even with the peaceful Miyagi-Do, we see with someone who's full of rage, it can be used for evil. And it can be used to inflict a lot of pain. And it's just something where, like, when it comes to bringing back, you know, like, older properties, Cobra Kai is probably the best example that I can think of a show doing it, because they're so detail-oriented and loving with each of the aspects, and even when it comes to criticizing them.
Like, I honestly would say it was a pretty good show to watch, even if you have no attachment to the series.
It's just fun to watch some good old-fashioned American karate.
American karate. Well, and then it makes Eagle Fang. Like, Eagle Fang karate, and even the kids like, that doesn't make sense.
Johnny doesn't need to make
just
sense.
Like,
Johnny,
shut up, nerd.
And well, that's the thing that the show really does. It recontextualizes the relationship that Johnny and Daniel had from the original movie. We just had, oh, this one's the hero, so he's the protagonist, and everything he did was right. And here's the villain, and everything he did was wrong. Where going back and reexamining that entire situation that defined both of their lives so much going forward, especially when I think my favorite moment from the entire series is when they bring back the original actress that played, you know, the girlfriend, the love triangle, Allie, and you watch her just rip the two boys apart, and like, well, in a loving also way, where like, these are two ex-boyfriends that, you know, I loved a long time ago, but it didn't work out, but I still love them as people, and we have a special relationship. Watching her mock them for, like, you know, their hot-headedness, which is, I guess I had a type, you know?
And the wife chimes in.
Oh, together. Yeah, it's a beautiful moment. And it was something as well where one of the big things that they recontextualized, because something I was mad about with the second movie is that Allie, who is like the entire emphasis, like, you know, is like the one, the trophy they're both fighting over, essentially, in the first movie, breaks up with Daniel off screen because the actress didn't come back because she got a really big career afterwards. They come back to address why she broke up with Daniel and go, oh, you know what? That not only makes sense with the character they've set up for Daniel as well, it also completely vindicates Allie, where it's like, oh, no. Daniel just got jealous because she was talking to a friend who was in college. And she's like, you know what, Daniel? No, I'm tired of this. We're done and such. And it was, you know, just one of those breakups. And it was just another relationship and like a long history of them. And like, I like that sort of context of being able to look back at high school relationships as well as the next generation of the ones developing here, and seeing all of these things that are defining these characters as people, but also changing as, you know, they age, and we look back on that and going, oh, you know what? Both the boys are just being silly and need to learn to work together and be cool.
Just be cool, man. Just be cool.
I'm excited for the fourth season here. It's going to be, the last one, but who knows, considering season three did really, really well on Netflix. But they're bringing back the craziest part of the third movie. Rob, do you remember anything from the third movie?
That was the one with Cobra Kai's instructor's brother, who was just bonkers.
Kind of. He wasn't his brother. We get to see what happens, but yes, it was Terry Silver, who is just this megalomaniac, cartoonish billionaire villain who, like, he's joking on the phone. He's like, aha, let's go toxic, and, you know, dump toxic waste into the swamplands, sort of, you know, crazy villain. You get to see in the third season why he's so dedicated to John Kreese. And Kyle was talking about it. It's the snake pit fight where they were captured in Nam. And for fun, the Vietnamese were making their American prisoners fight to the death over a snake pit. And Kreese stepped in so Terry didn't have to fight, you know, their sensei. And that's why Terry's like, anytime you need something, I'm here. And the final thing that happens in the last season is John Kreese picks up the phone and dials Terry. So I'm looking for cartoonish villainy in the fourth one. But I'm excited to see what's going to happen going forward, because they even use that part of the movie where everything comes back. They sell bonsai. Well, they don't sell. They give away bonsai trees with Daniel's car dealership. And they also have him reference back when some of the Cobra Kai leave, because like, no, this is crazy. Like, we're gonna leave, and they go join Miyagi-Do. Part of the way that Daniel uses to reconcile is like, no, I was a Cobra Kai for a short period as well, and you know that anger is something you have to overcome. And I like how they end up re-examining all of these themes in ways that just are, you know, fun for the story and fun for the history of it. But on that note, I guess we'll wrap up the show here, folks. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, if you want to continue the conversation online, you can do so on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ThunderGeekSpeak, or follow us on other social media on Twitter, Instagram. Of course, Kyle and Chris have been streaming on their respective Twitch pages, twitch.tv/FrozenFire727, or Chris the Tripod. And I'm Andrew.
I'm Rob.
I'm Megan.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Chris.
And we're your Thunder Geeks.
We're Thunder Geeks.
We'll see you next week.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all.